Welcome to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab a seat, and enjoy this episode of Escape, entitled Ring of Toth.
Escape. Escape tonight to ancient Egypt.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations presents Escape, a new series of programs of which this, the sixth, is The Ring of Thoth by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Wherever the English language is spoken, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is known for two things: his immortal character, Sherlock Holmes, and his unshakable belief in life beyond the grave. So great is the stature of Sherlock Holmes that Conan Doyle's earlier stories are all but forgotten. Stories like The Ring of Thoth, which so clearly anticipates the author's later fascination with spiritualism. We invite you now to escape to ancient Egypt and The Ring of Thoth, an adventure told in the words of John Van Siddart Smith, British Egyptologist.
I arrived in Paris on the 3:14 express from Dieppe and went immediately to my hotel in the Rue de Lafitte. My actions so far had worked out according to my planned schedule. I slept for exactly 2 hours, got up and dressed, donned a greatcoat, walked down the Avenue de l'Opéra, and entered a side door of the Louvre. Once inside, and amid surroundings entirely familiar to me, I made my way immediately to the Chamber of Egyptian Relics, or more specifically, to the cabinet in that chamber which contained the El Kab collection of papyri. Drawing out the particular roll I wished, I placed it on a nearby table, sat down, began to study it, when I noticed one of the museum attendants who was polishing some brasswork across the room. His face struck me as being curiously Egyptian. On sudden impulse, I decided to cross the room and speak to him. Approaching closer, I was impressed at once by the appearance of his skin. Drawn tautly across temple and cheek, it seemed as glazed and as shiny as varnished parchment. And out of narrowed slits, there glowed two green and vitreous eyes, misty with a dry shininess, eyes of a kind never seen in a human head before. I beg your pardon. I need one of the papyri from the Memphis collection. Could you tell me where it is?
You'll find it in the last cabinet at the end of the room, monsieur.
Thank you. You're Egyptian, aren't you?
No, monsieur. I am a Frenchman.
But, I thought perhaps...
If monsieur will excuse me now, I have other work to do.
I went back to the table and took up the papyrus I had been studying before. But my former calmness in translating the intricate hieroglyphics was gone, and out of the depths of my mind welled a feeling of terrible familiarity. I concentrated more deeply on my studies, pushing aside those thoughts conducive to mental turmoil, and at last, worn out by the inward struggle, I fell asleep. I awoke with a start, not remembering where I was. It was quite dark for a moment. Then gradually my eyes focused on the glints of moonlight reflected from the glass tops of specimen tables, from the shiny varnish of the mummy cases. And I realized with a feeling of sudden dread that I was alone in the Egyptian room of the Museum of the Louvre, locked in for the night. And I saw at that moment, approaching through the moonlit halls, a dim yellow flame. Nearer and nearer it came until I could perceive above it, as though floating in the air, the eerie, glistening face of the man I'd spoken to earlier. I shrank into the dark shadow of my corner, and he passed without seeing me, stopping before the mummy cases a few yards away. Scarcely daring to breathe, I watched him place the light on a table and begin feverishly to examine the tags on the specimens. In a moment, he gave a cry of delight and, drawing one of the mummies from its resting place, laid it on the table in the full glow of the lantern and set to work. He was unwinding the wrappings from the head of the corpse. A few turns revealed a tumbled cascade of black curls. A few more, the snow-white brow, then the delicate nostrils, and at last, the full, warm, passionate lips, the face of the most beautiful woman the world has ever seen.
Ah, ma pauvre petite, so long it has been, so very long. You must forgive me, beloved.
I could hardly believe my eyes. The man was obviously in love with this mummy. After a while, he left the body, turning his attention to one of the glass cases filled with an assortment of rings. From a pocket of his garment, he'd taken a small glass bottle containing some kind of liquid, and he used this now to test the rings, rejecting them one after another. Then at last...
This is it. It's the one. At last I found it. The ring of Thoth.
In his excitement, he dropped the bottle, and I gasped in surprise at the sudden sound.
Who's there?
I beg your pardon.
So it is you. No, do not move.
I didn't mean to spy on you. I fell asleep.
Who are you, monsieur?
I am John Vansittart Smith, a student of Egyptology.
No matter. You will observe this knife.
Yes.
Had I discovered you 5 minutes ago, monsieur, I should have slain you without a word.
What?
As it is now, I have found the ring. But I warn you not to interfere with me in any way.
I really haven't the slightest intention of it. After all, I'm only here by accident.
Perhaps.
I say, you shouldn't have unwrapped that mummy, you know. It's starting to deteriorate already.
Oh, my beloved.
Yes, before our eyes, the lovely face was crumbling, the hair falling away, the skin shriveling and cracking, the lips fading. The man hovered over the decaying body a moment, murmuring sorrowfully. And then he turned again.
No matter. That will not make the least difference in a little while. Of what importance is the dead shell, so long as her spirit waits for me at the other side of the veil?
What are you talking about? What is it you're proposing to do?
Tonight, monsieur, I have ended a quest and broken at last the ancient curse. Nothing now can prevent my joining her.
Are you actually claiming that you knew her?
She was Atma, daughter of the governor of Abaris, and both she and I lived in the reign of Thutmosis 3,500 years ago.
You're obviously mad.
Perhaps, but not in the way you think. There may be design in this, your coming here. It may be decreed that I should leave some account behind as a warning to other mortals as rash as myself. Very well, then. So be it. I am, as you surmised, an Egyptian. My name was Sasra, and my father had been the chief priest of Osiris in the great temple of Abaris, which stood in those days upon the Bubastic branch of the Nile. I was brought up in the temple and was trained in all those mystic arts and sciences known to the priesthood. Of all the mysteries that I studied, none intrigued me more than the question of life and death. And even to this question, in time, I found an answer.
But for a man to live beyond his allotted span of years, Master Sastra, the gods have not so ordained it.
Then perhaps they will have to revise their ordinances now that I've discovered their secret.
Tis not well to jest. I tremble, for though I've labored in your service for a year, I knew not the goal of your endeavors. May Osiris forgive me.
Ah, what a pity you look upon it this way. For I'd thought that in return for your assistance, I should grant you, too, the gift of centuries of indestructible life.
I would not have it, Master Sastra. And I beg that you, too, forgo it.
Forgo it? I introduced the fluid into my veins 1 month ago.
Oh, no. Then you are lost indeed.
Lost? Do you call this being lost? Let's see now. My heart should be about here.
Oh, that knife. No, don't! Master, you've killed yourself.
Not at all. See? It bleeds a little. But in a while, the wound will close up. And that's all.
You... It's immortality.
No. I shall not live forever. But for 5,000, perhaps 6,000 years, I shall be immune from all dangers of violence, poison, disease, starvation.
You cannot die?
Now, with this fluid in my veins, nothing in this world can end my life.
Sastra, are you there?
Someone calls.
It's Parmes, the priest of Thoth. In here, my friend. Enter.
Oh. Greetings, Sastra, master of sciences, and his worthy assistant.
If you will excuse me, masters, I go to make my peace with Osiris.
What's wrong with your helper, Sorcerer?
The thought of a well-nigh eternal life has frightened him into gibbering superstition.
Then you still believe in the discovery?
Believe in it? Parmes, my friend. Look.
By the heavens, what a scar.
It pierces the heart. It was done only a moment ago with this knife.
Hmm?
See? I can put it back in the wound. So.
You suffered no ill effects?
None whatever.
And if I turn the knife in the wound, that would do you no harm?
You may try it. I feel nothing. I walked last week in the snake pits by the river, was struck innumerable times. It caused no harm.
By the great Anubis.
Will you have it then? Out of all Egypt, I have chosen only you, my friend, to share the gift. But the choice is yours.
I'd be a fool to refuse, Sastra. I'll have it. And now, what must I do?
First, we must open a vein in your wrist, like this.
Oh.
Then, we drip the elixir slowly into your bloodstream. Steady now.
I don't feel anything.
There is no sensation. It is done.
So simple? There is nothing more?
That's all. And now done, it can never be changed.
It seems incredible, supernatural.
It's no more than a chemical discovery. But with it, while all this about us passes away, you and I, Parmes, will live on for 50 centuries. Think of it, my friend. 5,000 years of life.
5,000 years. Only the two of us.
Listen, that noise. Some procession must be passing in the street.
I have an idea what it may be. Come on over to the window.
Clear the road. Stand back and make way for the loveliest pearl of Thebes.
She's being carried on the shoulders of slaves, Parmes. She must be some woman of rank.
Her name is Atma. She's the daughter of the new governor.
Her curtains are drawn back. Perhaps we'll have a look at her. Oh, Parmes.
Mm-hmm. Is she not beautiful?
She is the most desirable, the only utterly desirable woman I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, I saw her yesterday at the temple.
Then you're most fortunate, my friend. You've had 24 more hours to dream about her than I have had. I must know her, Parmes. I must make her love me. I'll send gifts. I'll call on her tomorrow. Oh, it has to be then. I couldn't wait any longer than tomorrow.
A visitor calls upon the beloved of the universe. He is Sastro, priest of the temple of Osiris.
Well, bid him approach.
Enter, Sastro.
Oh, most beautiful of all Egypt, I cast myself at your feet.
That's a noble ambition. But wouldn't it be much better to sit here beside me and watch the fish in the fountain?
Much better.
You will all withdraw, except you, my girl. play something for us, at a distance. Well, Sasra, for so I understand you're called, am I to deem this an official visit by a master of the temple?
Oh, Atma, my beloved. That is, no, it is not official.
Oh? Perhaps then you wish to see my father on personal business of your own.
Oh, no, no. I shall pay my respects to him at some other time.
Then could it be I you've come to see?
Yes, yes.
And since you've said the visit's not official, your reason must be a personal one.
Oh, it is.
Well, what is it?
Atma, I have known women who are famed for their beauty throughout the Valley of the Nile. But not one, not all of them, are so lovely as you.
How thoughtful of you to come here and tell me.
Atma, I've no wish to intrude my desires, my hopes, beyond such extent as you may wish to hear. But, oh, I'm finding this very difficult.
Sasra, I've been told that you're a master of science, that you've unlocked the secrets of the universe, learned all the mysteries of nature itself.
Your informants have been most generous.
Yes, I'm inclined to think so.
What?
Because you've discovered nothing at all about such a simple thing as a woman's heart.
What do you mean?
I come from Thebes. And the women of Thebes are warm-blooded, passionate. And we know what we want.
Atma.
I saw you first 3 days ago. Why do you think I told my bearers to carry me down that street beneath your window?
And so, miracle of all miracles, Atma loved me. Worshipping the very ground her feet had trod upon, I lived through those glorious weeks. And with it all, our love grew apace. But one thing bore heavily upon my mind, and I came to speak of it more often to my beloved as we sat and talked by the fountain in her garden.
Look, Sasra. See how the stars shine from the water?
Yes, Atma. More lovely even than their glow in the heavens.
Are they very old, the stars?
Very old, beloved. As old as time.
And they'll go on gleaming there, long years after you and I are gone and forgotten.
Atma, my dearest, we've talked of this before, and I know it distresses you to think of it.
No, Sasra. Tonight everything is beautiful. We shall not talk of death.
Not of death, but of life. They're only counterparts of one another.
Oh, if we could only live together, grow old together, and die in the same instant.
But how much better to live and love 5,000 years? Will you not do it? Does so long a time seem too great for the love you feel for me?
Beloved, no. The time would pass in an instant, and the loss then be no easier borne than now.
Then why draw back? Will you not take the elixir now, tonight?
I'm afraid, Sasra. We'll anger the gods.
We will outlive the gods.
They will have their revenge.
Whatever occurred, we'd be together.
Yes, I've thought of that. Were it not so, I'd not even consider doing it.
Then you'll do it. Atma, you'll do it.
I need more time, only a little more to assure myself.
How much?
Tonight, Sasra. Give me tonight.
Every hour you live without the elixir is another hazard. All right, then. Tonight. And may Isis herself guard over you until the fluid courses in your veins.
And so, on that accursed night, I went to my chambers and slept. And while I slept, the moon of Isis shone over the delta of the Nile, shone but to light as foul a scene as was ever done on earth. Some hours had passed
Master
away.
Master Sosra! Master Sosra! Awaken! Master, awaken at once!
No. Who is it?
Oh, what a terrible thing has transpired this night.
You! You're one of Atma's slaves. Why do you come here?
Oh, Master. Master.
What has happened? What's the matter? Speak.
It is she, the light of the world.
Tell me what has happened to her.
Master, master, brigands came in the night. She is dead.
You lie. You lie.
Oh, Sasra, the slave speaks the truth.
Parmes, my friend. What foul joke's behind these words of his?
It's not a joke. Atma is dead. You, slave, depart from us.
Yes, masters. By your gracious leave, I depart.
Such a thing cannot be. Oh, of course. The two of you planned it together, sought to frighten me out of my wits. It's very amusing, really. But I was terrified for a moment.
Atma no longer lives. She was stabbed to death only a short while ago.
No. Oh, no, no. She can't be dead.
She is dead, Sosra, and for all eternity.
I must go to her. Something. Surely something can be done.
I killed her.
What is it? What has happened?
I killed her. Oh. I struck her through the heart with this very knife.
You? You, Parmes? Why?
Because she loved you.
Why?
And because I loved her.
You, my friend.
She would not look at me.
And for that, you would lose her to both of us forever?
To both of us, Sosra? I think not.
By the living Osiris, give me that knife.
That's it. Strike. Again. Here's the heart. Here, strike. Again and again, Sosra.
Wait. What foolishness. I cannot kill you.
You're wrong, Sosra. You have killed me. Those were grievous blows.
But the fluid, that cursed elixir of life, it runs in your veins as well as mine.
True. But in mine is also the antidote.
You lie. There is no antidote.
Yes, day and night, these many weeks, I've worked, and I found it.
You couldn't have. You. Is there more of it?
Yes, a very little. But you'll never find it.
Where is it? Tell me where it is.
In the ring, Sosra. In the ring of Thoth. And you'll never find it.
I will. I will. I must.
Go on. Live. Live your 50 centuries. And every hour of them. Think. It was your hand that struck me down. With the same knife that took her from you. Think while I go to join her.
Oh, no. You're not dead. You're not! No! 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 For months, I searched the papers, test tubes, and the chemical flasks in the chambers of the dead priest of Thoth. Searched and found nothing. I sifted the sands where he'd walked, questioned his slaves and servants, and learned nothing. Every moment of my life, my terrible and unwanted life, was devoted to an unceasing hunt for the Ring of Thoth. And all to no avail. And in time, a horde of barbarians overran the city of Abaris. And the sands of the desert buried forever the last of my hopes. And so began the deadly march of the centuries. How can you know how terrible a thing time is? You, who've experienced only the narrow course between the cradle and the grave. I've floated down the whole stream of history. I have traveled in all lands, and I have dwelt with all nations. Every tongue is the same to me. I need not tell you how slowly the centuries drifted by. Centuries without end, years without number. And so, I came to be one day, a few weeks past, in San Francisco, where I came across a certain item in a newspaper.
Among recent discoveries in Lower Egypt is an unopened mummy case containing, according to the inscription on the outside, the body of the daughter of the governor of Abaris in the days of Thutmosis. In the same burial crypt, dropped into a crevice between the stones, was found a large platinum ring of singular design. Both specimens have been sent for examination to the Louvre in Paris.
So, I presume you came here to Paris, obtained this position of attendant in the Louvre with the idea of...
Only yesterday, Monsieur Smith. As you may imagine, I had little difficulty in convincing the director of my knowledge of Egyptian relics.
The ring, then. The one I saw you remove from the case is the Ring of Thoth?
Without question.
You've discovered how the ring must be used?
The secret is obvious. See, the stone is hollow, and drops of liquid move within it.
Have you considered the possibility that this antidote may not perform the function which has been claimed for it?
It will, monsieur. And there'll be no need of a knife to strike me down. My death was due in a time long past. And only this damnable fluid that runs through my veins supports the weight of my years. I delay no longer. I go to join her where she waits for me in death.
No, don't! Oh.
Too late. I've broken the gem. I've taken the antidote.
I stood and watched him with a terrible fascination, but without pity and without compassion. He turned away from me and reeled toward the mummy he'd left on the table across the room. But even as he turned, the parchment skin of his face cracked and shredded. Discolored lips shriveled away from the yellow teeth. The vitreous eyes withered into nubs of formless plasm. And the full weight of his 3,500 years descended on him in an instant. I left that room of death and walked over the marble floors toward the exit. My footsteps echoing through the empty halls, even as they had echoed for so long in the corridors of time. And I wondered as I walked if Sosra knew now what I knew, that the antidote in the Ring of Thoth can bring death to the body, but not to the soul. And I wondered in what cloak of flesh his spirit now dwelt, just as I, Parmes, priest of Thoth, had for the last 40 years of my 3,500 dwelt in the body of John Vansittart Smith.
So little and so red.
Well, now, he's only 2 days old.
But he doesn't look a bit like either his father or me.
Give him time, my dear. All babies look pretty much alike when they're first born.
Well, I don't know. His eyes are... It's silly, of course, but he looks like an Egyptian.
Produced and directed by William N. Robeson, The Ring of Thoth by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with Jack Webb as Sorcerer, Thomas Freeburn Smith as Vansittart Smith, and Joan Banks as Atma. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Escape is presented by the Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations each week at this time. Next week, we invite you to escape to a raft in the South Pacific with John Russell in his unforgettable story of human frailty, The Fourth Man. And so good night until next week at this time, when again it will be time to escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
why do those kids need cars? I bet they're driving drunk. What do you think, Fish? Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of The Saint, entitled Color Blind Killer.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as the Saint.
Hello.
Who is... Oh.
How is my favorite shipboard acquaintance this evening?
Oh, Simon, you startled me. I can hardly see you through the fog here on deck.
Oh, yes, it is getting thicker, isn't it? But I suppose it's to be expected. Last night, nature went on a binge of moonshine, and this is her foggy morning after.
Oh. Only it's evening.
How can you tell through the fog? You know, you have a very pretty laugh, Barbara. I'll listen for it in all of your pictures from now on.
Thank you, Simon. But I'm not going to make any more pictures. I'm retiring.
Retiring? At the peak of your career?
I'm just tired of pictures, that's all.
Barbara, you'll never be able to run away from it.
What do you mean?
I'm referring to whatever it is that frightens you. Why don't you tell me about it, Barbara?
There's nothing to tell. I'm tired. I need a rest. Please, Simon, don't make me talk about it. There's some things that... Simon, is that someone standing there?
No. No, I don't see anyone. Oh, you are nervous.
Oh, Simon, if only I could confide in someone, if I could tell you what I...
Perhaps I already know more than you think I do. You're cold.
Yes.
Where's your wrap?
It's over there someplace on one of those decks.
I'll find it. I don't see it here, Barbara. Are you sure you... Barbara! Behind you! Look out! Barbara! Barbara! Man overboard! Man overboard!
Maybe you'd like a swim too, Saint.
What? Oh, hello. I suppose the usual question is, where am I?
Sometimes they awaken from your type of custom-made coma asking, who am I?
Evidently, I wasn't hit quite that hard. I even remember who you are, Dr. Norman. It is Dr. Norman, the celebrated psychiatrist, isn't it?
Yeah, that is very good, Temple, but I'm afraid I must still confine you here to the ship's infirmary for a while.
Huh?
A possible concussion.
See, tell me, what makes a famous neurologist like you pose as a near ship's doctor?
I'm really not posing. Partridge, the ship's physician, is ill.
Oh.
I was within earshot when I heard the familiar call, "Is there a doctor in the house?" And no, Simon, don't try to get up. I have a flask here. A drink will make you happy.
Oh, not right now, thank you. I recall I have some unfinished business to attend to.
Barbara?
Yes. Was she?
They couldn't find her in the fog. She's gone. It was a horrible accident.
Horrible, yes. Accident, no.
You mean to say she didn't fall overboard?
She was murdered.
Murdered? But who?
I think I know who. My head, it feels like the Aberdeen Proving Ground.
I will mix you a sedative. You know, you're not looking very well.
I always look like this when I'm angry. There's only one cure.
Yes, I know. The lady with the scales known as Madame Justice. You know, Templer, I've been curious about... What makes a man like you tick?
Well, I'll tell you. Every 8 days or so, someone winds me up. Right now, I'm wound up tight. Tight with fury.
Well, as a psychiatrist, I would advise you to unwind me. Here we are. I'll drink this. It will put you to sleep after a while.
Thank you.
You say you think you know who killed Barbara, Simon.
I was wrong. I do know.
I think you ought to talk to me. Unwind yourself.
You think I need psychiatry, doctor?
Well, I think you're too taut at the moment. That plus your concussion, it might be dangerous.
Very well, doctor, I'll unwind. I'll tell you the entire story.
If you don't mind, Simon, here, this will help the rhythm. The metronome. Psychiatrist often used it. But,
No, I don't mind. I'd never met Barbara Brooke, although I doubt if there's a human being alive who hasn't heard of her or seen her in the movies. I first saw her the day we boarded ship. There was something in her expression, in the way she walked and talked and smiled, that immediately told me here was someone I should know. Her entire demeanor was an attitude of invitation.
A romance.
Fear, doctor. She was a frightened lady. She wanted someone near her. I walked over to her there on deck and immediately made myself useful. Her steward evidently had become busy elsewhere, so I tipped my hat and said somewhat idiotically, get your program here, lady. You can't tell the staterooms without the numbers.
I beg your pardon.
Your steward seems to have deserted you. Oh. I've sailed this scow before, so if it's the direction to your stateroom you're looking
well,
for...
Well, I would like to know.
I would too. Number, please.
A36 Main Deck.
Thank you very, very much. It's this way. My name's Temper. Simon, for short. And, of course, you're Barbara Brooks. You know, we passed the bar en route to A36 Main Deck. Does an old-fashioned with a new acquaintance sound inviting?
It will, a little later, if you're on the ship.
Ooh, there's several acts. This.
You've gone now, Nicole.
I think I saw the man you meant. Certain off-center gentleman named Rader.
Rader? I don't know that name.
Now, surely you've heard of Phil Rader. He's just as big a star in his line of work as you are in yours.
What is his line of work?
Well, he's an exterminator of human beings.
I'm afraid.
It was obvious from the moment I first saw you. Why don't you tell me about it?
No, I can't. No, I'd be killed.
Good a reason as any for not telling me, but I must warn you, I have a peculiar talent for finding things out for myself.
Oh, no, you mustn't do anything. Please, please.
Hello, Raider.
Well, Miss Saint.
Mm-hmm.
World's getting smaller.
Yes, but I understand you're doing your share to see that it doesn't get overcrowded. Traveling for your health again, or just traveling?
Just traveling.
Raider, why does the mere glimpse of you rounding a corner start a lady's teeth to chattering?
Lady? I don't know any ladies. Obviously. Maybe she thought I was someone else.
Maybe. And if you're of a mind to annoy her, you'll wish you were.
Look, Saint, just soak up sunshine on this cruise. Don't go poking in any dark places. Might be bad for you.
Oh, what sort of bad, Raider?
Look, big shot, just so there's no misunderstanding. You butt in where you ain't welcome on this cruise and...
Yes?
And I'll kill you.
How is your head, Sam?
It feels as if a regimental crap game was going on inside of it with jet-propelled dice.
You haven't drunk your sedative yet. Here.
Oh, thank you. Shall I go on taking the load off of my concussion?
By all means. I think I was present at the next sequence.
Yes, doctor, you were. It was the night of that ridiculous costume ball ship's captains are so fond of arranging.
Yes. I remember we were at the bar together. You were a pirate, I recall.
Yes, and you were a clown. The ball was loaded with clowns, some of them not even aware of their clownishness. But it was gay and sprightly, and the music was good. I remember our conversation, Doctor. You suddenly appeared at my elbow and said in the most shivery, sinister manner...
You know, Templar, I have a confession to make to you.
Well, I'm always interested in confessions, Doctor.
I've had a schoolboy crush on the beautiful Barbara ever since I saw her in pictures first. Tell me, what does one do about it?
Well, I know exactly what I would do if I were you, Doctor.
Yes.
I'd consult the nearest psychiatrist.
At the prices we charge, no thanks. I was hoping you'd cut a fellow in on your acquaintanceship, Templar. But if you won't introduce me, won't you at least show me which mask she's hiding under? I think I might be able to make my own introduction.
Oh, very well, Doctor. Look for a sylph-like figure in a blue and yellow harlequin costume.
Thank you, Templar, thank you. And if you should ever need a good psychiatrist...
At the prices you charge?
I will be seeing you.
Don't turn around, Mr. Kempler. I have a pistol in the small of your back.
Now, really, is that any way to enjoy a walk?
Listen, Saint, and listen hard.
Oh, I'm all ears, except for the small of my back, which feels abnormally large at the moment.
Certain arrangements have been made, Saint. It means a big head of lettuce if they go through.
So?
All the signs say keep out. See that you do. Now, don't turn around. This costume's so pretty, I'd hate to have to put a hole through my pocket.
Well, it's probably just a coincidence, but I've acquired the same regard for the small of my back.
Keep regarding it that way, Saint. Don't let your nose wander where it doesn't belong. And you might begin by forgetting you saw certain people aboard this boat.
See, just tell me how you're going to swing it, Mrs. Miller. Oh, don't be surprised. I'd recognize the notorious Lil Miller's voice on a party line. How are you going to take him, Lil? A palm daze or perhaps a marked deck?
This rod has a hair trigger, Saint. Just a touch and you're...
Lil, what's the matter?
That girl there, the one in the hall.
Lil!
You're lucky, Saint. I'd have shot.
Give her air. Don't crowd.
Crowd her all you want to. She won't mind now.
Is she?
Yes, a stiletto in the back leaves very little doubt. She's dead.
You know, Simon, I would never have paid the late Mrs. Miller for a professional card sharp. She was anything but the type.
Professional card sharps are always anything but the type, Doctor.
Yeah. And to think I actually played bridge with her myself. With a crook and a hot-headed one, it said.
Well, as my old grandmother used to say, Doctor, beware of lady thieves with red hair.
I guess the lady's red hair accounted for the lack of insulation in her temperament. Oh, how does your head feel, Sam?
Better, Doctor. Much better.
You still haven't touched your sedative, you know.
Haven't I?
I think you'll find that it helps, Simon. Here.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, shortly after the murder of Mrs. Miller, Doctor... I called on her bereaved husband and partner in crime. A very interesting visit it was, too.
You have the knack for making all of your visits interesting, Simon. Tell me about it.
Well, I found Miller in the bar, quenching his sorrow with the merry waters of the River of Forgetfulness.
$50,000 in the palm of our hands and beep. No more Lil. No more Lil, no more sucker. No more sucker, beep. No more $50,000.
I see you valued your wife highly. Who was the sucker, Miller?
Ha ha, you're funny.
Tell me, what's Phil Rader cruising for, Miller? And don't tell me it's a coincidence he's on board the same ship.
You get funnier and funnier.
Why is Barbara Brooks so afraid of Rader?
You ain't even warm, Saint. You're a mile wide of the target.
Well, I'd better use a different kind of ammunition then, Miller.
Yeah? Like what?
Like a little murder performed on an unwilling sucker in... Reno.
Huh? What do you know about that?
You won't like going back to Reno, Miller. It gets hot in the summertime, especially in the penitentiary.
Rader was with Lil and me on this deal.
Miller, put the zipper on.
Rader. I wasn't going to say anything. Phil, honest, I was just...
Skip it, Miller. I always knew someday you'd show canary yellow. I thought you and I had a little understanding, Saint.
You've got a reputation for wrong thoughts, Rader.
Yeah, but right or wrong, I back my ideas up. To the hilt, Saint.
Keep that frog sticker undercover, Rader, or I might take it away from you. And the Dutch courage that rides with it, too.
I'll keep it hidden for now. You just be careful of the places where the lights don't shine, Saint. Come on, Miller, I want to talk with you.
Well, I'll be out in a little while, Phil. I want a drink.
You're drunk enough, Canary. Come on.
You'd better go, Miller. And if you can't talk your way out of it, my regards to the fishes.
And I recall it was shortly after Mr. Rader passed on his second warning that you and I met for the first time professionally.
Yes, Doctor, the very next night.
Well, I am very surprised at you. He'd warned you to stay away from dark places.
Yes, Doctor, so he had. But I'm perverse by nature, and I like to poke around. I was strolling around the deck with Barbara, getting moonburned and trying desperately to get some more information.
So wonderful having you near, Simon. I feel safe.
Safe? I refuse to accept the compliment, particularly on a moonlit night at sea.
I'm referring to danger, Simon, not romance.
We're often the very same thing. I'd like to join the team, Barbara. Why don't you confide in me?
Because if I did, we'd both be dead by morning. I must go now. Good night, Simon.
Good night.
Don't turn around, Templar. I've got a...
I know. A gun pointed at the small of my back.
That's it. Now keep away from Barbara Brooks. Am I clear?
Clear enough. Anything else?
Yeah. Just so it sinks in, Saint. Take this along to
remember me by. Once again you enter the picture, Dr. Norman. You found me there, lying on the deck, basking in moonlight.
And blood. Go on, Simon. Tell me the rest of it.
Well, after your neat job of vulcanizing me, thus saving me a trip to the ship's doctor and innumerable words of explanation, I hit upon a strategy, and my next visit found me calling in the lion's den. I tell you, you're being made a patsy raider. You're on the verge of being demoted back to second-class hoodlum.
I can take care of myself.
Well, I admit a minor sandbagging committed in your good name doesn't amount to much, Raider. But what if the same someone likes your name and decides to use it in other ways?
What do you mean?
I mean murder. You're a lead pipe cinch to pay for one of your own someday, Raider. But meanwhile, how would you feel getting hung for somebody else's shenanigans?
I'd be annoyed.
You sure would.
Look, I'm not rigged up with no murder saint. Lil meant 50 grand to us alive. That's what we figured the sucker was good for.
Well, that's a good enough reason for wanting Lil among the present instead of the late Raider. Tell me, what was the angle? Blackmail?
Nah, nothing so crude, Saint. I sponsor the party, spot him, finger him, and oil him, and the millers squeeze him through a deck of cards. The guy's a sucker for good-looking dames and card games, that's all.
That sounds very uncomplicated, easy picking.
The guy ain't had the coin long enough to be smart about it.
Who's the guy?
He makes water heaters.
Oh, the fat man with the diamonds from Passaic.
Yeah, that's the sucker.
I should have tumbled.
Looks like you did. I thought you were out for a bust-up. 50 G's a lot of money, Saint. I figured if I could scare you, it'd be insurance.
How about Barbara Brooks?
Deal me out. I'm not in on whatever the caper is there.
She saw you the day we sailed and she got scared.
Well, maybe it's because I ain't exactly pretty.
Yeah.
But if you really want to know something, Saint, I'll tell you. I was propositioned on a stunt against that dame a few weeks before we sailed. I turned it down. A big dough, too.
A murder deal?
Yeah, big dough to bump her off. Not for me, though. Nah, she's too prominent. Too much heat on those jobs.
Who made the offer, Raider?
He wasn't exactly interested in leaving his calling card, Saint. Just a John Smith, as far as I'm concerned.
But he had a description, didn't he? Everybody has a description.
Well, sure. He was a medium-sized guy with... Hey, the lights. Who turned them off?
Get down! Raider! Raider, are you...
Brown tie, blue shirt.
Not a very harmonious color scheme, is it?
Raider. Yeah.
Thank you, Raider. At least your last earthly utterance was in the direction of good. Thank you.
Tie blue shirt. What did he mean, Simon?
Well, it means that either the man for whom I search isn't a very fastidious dresser, Doctor, or else...
Or else?
Or else he's colorblind. Blue and brown just aren't worn together.
Well, no,
then. I'll take that drink now, Doctor.
Oh, and the sedative I mixed for you. Your concussion.
Later, Doctor, later.
Very well. I can see that you're going to be a very difficult patient. I hope you don't mind drinking out of another medicine glass, huh?
No, right now I prefer.
Say what?
A little more, Doctor. That's fine. Has such a beautiful color, hasn't it, Doctor?
Yeah, hasn't it, though? Aren't you going to drink it, Simon?
In a moment, Doctor, when I finish my story.
Oh, yes, of course, the story. Barbara's murder was next.
Yes, huh? Barbara was next. But immediately before our last meeting on deck in the fog, Doctor... I found out what she was afraid of.
You did? But how?
It was easy. The steward had some keys. I had some money. The steward has enough now for that chicken ranch he's always dreamed of.
You broke into Barbara's stateroom.
Yes.
Well, what did you find, Simon?
Oh, lingerie, perfume, stockings, and some letters, Doctor. Peculiar letters.
Huh? Fan mail?
Yes. Yes, and all from the same fan.
A fan she was once engaged to marry, Doctor. A fan who loved her very much and hated her in equal proportions. Who was so torn between love and hate, he had to kill her.
Ah, schizophrenic.
You should know.
What do you mean?
Well, you know the classifications. You're the doctor.
Oh. Drink your sedative, Simon.
A colorblind schizophrenic. I don't believe I've ever met one before, Dr. Norman. So colorblind, he mistook the green and orange harlequin costume worn by Lil Miller for the blue and yellow one worn by Barbara.
That is very interesting, Simon.
Poor Lil. If she'd come to the ball as anything but a harlequin, she'd have lived to take in $50,000.
Your sedative, Simon.
You know, you were wrong about Lil's hair, Doctor. It wasn't red. It was brown.
You said it was red.
I wanted to see if you'd agree.
Your sedative.
Yes, of course. Hand it to me, would you, Doctor? Stay alongside the drink. Yeah. No. No, don't try to tell them apart by their aromas, Doctor. It's obvious that they're different colors. Or can't you tell?
You find it, Saint. I'd like very much for you to drink it.
My doctor, what a pretty purple gun you're wearing. Or is it pink?
Drink up, Tipler. You hardly feel it. It's just a dash of prussic acid.
Dr. Norman, when you give a sedative, you go overboard.
Drink it, Tipler.
Well, you're the doctor. A toast to you, Dr. Norman. To your green shirt, blue tie, and gray handkerchief, none of which match. Here's how.
Oh, my eyes! You threw it in my eyes!
It was a question of your eyes or my stomach, Doctor.
In my eyes, I'm blind!
You'll get over it, Doctor, which is more than can be said of me if one of those wild shots of yours should hit me. I know I shouldn't practice medicine without a license, Doctor, any more than you should. But here's a sedative from me to you. Pleasant nightmares, Dr. Norman.
You have been listening to another adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. And now here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a prejudice-filled America, no one would be secure in his job, his business, his church, or his home. Yet racial and religious antagonisms are exploited daily by quacks and adventurers whose followers make up the irresponsible lunatic fringe of American life. Refuse to listen to or spread rumors against any race or religion. Help to stamp out prejudice in our country. Let's judge our neighbors by the character of their lives alone, and not on the basis of their religion or origin. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at the same time for another exciting adventure of The Saint. Good night.
By Michael Cramoy. Our cast included Betty Lou Gerson, Gene Bates, Frank Gerstle, Bill Conrad, and Barney Phillips. The music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Saphir production and is directed by Thomas A. McAvity. Vincent Price is soon to be seen in Harry M. Popkin's production of Champagne for Caesar, co-starring Ronald Coleman. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Merrill Ross. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the Mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at lgab.com.